You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox, is spending some quality time with her family. But not to worry, she'll be back with us next week. Each week, we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while answering questions and bringing you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually healthy. Having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us, and we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is therapeutic treatment and how the performing arts increases its effectiveness in dealing with at-risk youth. Our guest today, Glenn Zog, is the president and CEO of Heritage Schools of Provo Canyon. Heritage is a residential treatment center for adolescent boys and girls with mental health and educational issues. Glenn has been with Heritage for over 18 years. He has extensive experience in administrating a treatment center for at-risk adolescents. Glenn is also the president of NATSAP, which is the National Association of Therapeutic Schools and Programs, headquartered in Maryland. NATSAP has over 150 member organizations nationwide. Glenn, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan.
Glenn, it's great to be here. And one of the things that I want to do, and before we really get to the topic itself, I'd like you to share with our listeners a little bit about Heritage School, pretty much what it is and what your philosophy is.
Well, Heritage School is a residential treatment center for adolescent boys and girls from the age of 12 up to the age of 18. And we treat kids with serious emotional problems and mental illness, and they come to us with a variety of different disorders. But Heritage philosophy of care and treatment is a we have a relationship model program. We try to nurture relationships, also try to have effective firmness with how we treat the kids. We also have to set boundaries and whatnot with the kids. But developing a relationship with them, encouraging them while they are in treatment. Our founder believes that without a relationship, you can't really affect change. And with the relationship, change is evident, and it's important to have that while you're doing your treatment.
Well, and I'm not saying that there is necessarily a typical student in your school, but if you had to typify the type of kids that are coming to your school, how would you describe some of them? And this may help some of the parents that are out there wondering, what should I be doing with mine?
Well, Alan, we have lots of different types of kids that come to us. Mostly, a lot of the kids have a major depression issues, mood disorders, struggling in school, not attending school. Some of them have had problems with drug and alcohol abuse, but most of them, you know, we have kids that have bipolar disorder, severe anxiety, kids that have, like I said, major depression, and other types of illnesses that are preventing them from functioning in the home or at school and doing what they need to do every day.
Okay. I I'm someone who has, I've been out to the school, I've toured the school, so I mean, I already know how great it is. But one of the things that I know that really moved me, the first time I heard the co-founder, Jerry Spanos's message, can you share a little bit of that so the listeners can get a real understanding of the principles behind this school?
Well, let me start by telling you a little bit about Jerry himself and how Jerry came about founding this school about 27 years ago. Jerry, as a youngster himself, had a difficult time in school. One day his mother took him to school and he sat in the principal's office while the principal told his mother that, "I'm sorry, but your son is educably retarded and he's not going to be able to do well in school. He'll always be a low performer. He's not very, he's not very bright." And all this was being told to him, to his mother, while he's present. And since that time, he always just figured, well, I'll just maybe graduate from high school if I'm lucky, and continue in my life doing whatever. And while he was serving a voluntary service for his church, he had a companion that was with him and told him, he says, "You know, what are you going to do when you finish? What are you going to do with your life?" He says, "Oh, I'll just probably go back and get a job and just find some work." And he says, "Well, why don't you go to school? You know, you are really bright. You really know how to work with people. You know how to talk well with people. Why don't you do something that you're really good at? Why don't you go to college?" He says, "Oh, I can't go to college. You know, there's no way. I'm not smart enough to go to college." But that was kind of a turning point for him. He did decide to go to college, and he had a difficult time in his life in college. With the help of some teachers, and he always struggled in testing. He could never do testing, but he's a brilliant man. He's very smart and a very savvy person, but he didn't think he was at the time. Going through college, he was able to graduate his undergraduate degree, and his teachers encouraged him to continue with his education. He says, "Nobody's going to take me. How am I going to get into a graduate program? I've got to take a test." He says, "I'm terrible at tests." They allowed him to do testing a little bit differently. He was able to get into the graduate program at the University of Utah, and he successfully completed his graduate program. And then he became a therapist. He's a licensed clinical social worker and a licensed marriage and family therapist as well. And I guess the rest is history, but he started out in a very difficult situation as a youngster. His life wasn't as easy, and because of the help of some of his teachers and others around him, he was able to get the help that he needed to be successful.
Well, and I think, first of all, I mean, it is a beautiful story, but it also drives home that point that those things that we tell our children or that they hear from teachers or from other kids or anything, it really makes a difference. It really has an impact on the way that they feel about themselves, and which is one of the great things in regards to Heritage and so many of the programs like it, is that, you know, you're allowing the children to find their greatness, you know, find your greatness, which is one of the things that you do, which is the topic of our show today, and that is through performing arts. So now tell us a little bit about the performing arts program and how that has grown as such an integral part of the therapy for these kids.
Well, Alan, clear back in 1999, we had a drama teacher. She was of Greek origin, and she loved Greek tragedies, and she was teaching one in her drama class. And she came to us, and she, it's kind of interesting, she came from New York, I guess the jet set. She did a lot of social things and a lot of fundraisers and a lot of parties types of things. And so she was kind of savvy that way. And she was saying, "Well, you know, we can, since Heritage is a nonprofit organization," she thought, "well, we could do this as a fundraiser to help raise some money for this program and invite people to come. And we can do this play for the public and have kind of a real gala affair out of it." Well, she was convincing enough. She talked us into doing that, and we actually had the performance up at the Sundance Resort in their screening room theater. And we had maybe about 100 people come to the show. Most of them were friends from her Greek community in Salt Lake City, and we had about 15 kids in the show. It was a pretty difficult process to go through. The kids had a variety of different problems and concerns, and the supervision and the instruction and the direction, particularly when you have a director coming from outside of your program, not knowing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult for her to manage and to direct these kids. So especially because we had no place to rehearse. We were rehearsing in the lobby of some building, and we didn't have a theater, we didn't have a gymnasium, we didn't have anything to rehearse in. But the important thing is, these kids were able to get through a Greek tragedy, believe it or not, memorize this show, and perform it to the public. The girl that was in the lead, she had Tourette syndrome, and she had a pretty visible tic. And during the show, while she was performing, it was hardly noticeable because she was so focused on what she was doing and presenting in the show. That kind of made us, after the show, the kids commented during, we had a little banquet with people that were there, and they kind of spontaneously got up and started telling about themselves, saying, you know, if it wasn't for where I am today and in this program, that I wouldn't be here. And doing the play and memorizing and doing this production really helped them in getting to the next step in their treatment. And we realized that this is a really beneficial mm-hmm. thing that these kids are going through. It was very difficult and hard, and we decided that, hey, we've got to figure out how to make this a part of our program, our treatment program, because this is really, you know, we're onto something here. And so we contacted a young lady in her 70s to help us direct our shows. And at first she said, no, there's no way I can do this. She came to us. We finally had her visit our campus, and she saw the kids and saw what they were doing, and she kind of fell in love with them, and she decided to direct a show. The first show we did was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and we had a huge cast of about, I think it was about 60-65 kids.
Wow.
And it was pretty difficult process again. Like I said, we've got kids with a variety of issues and problems, but she worked with those kids individually. She showcased them individually, and you know, back to what you were saying before, this is an opportunity for these kids to learn in a different way and to look at life differently. These kids normally wouldn't have an opportunity to participate in a high school production of any kind because of they're not going to school.
Right.
You know, they're not going to school. They're not the most talented people. They haven't had the opportunities that the other kids have had because they've had a lot of emotional problems throughout their life. But they get going with our director, and by the way, she's 81 years old now, and she's still directing shows.
That's great.
So she does individualized attention to those kids. She wants to showcase them all. She wants to make them all look good. We have a great customer that does those types of things. But
well, you know, you also mentioned in regards to them not getting the opportunity in the schools that they would be coming from, and I would think a lot of that might also come from the fact that the teachers, you know, when the teachers are having to have whatever, you know, 40 kids now in, you know, in a public school, I think maybe they're going to be more concerned over, you know, if we are doing a production and if this child has been disruptive in my classroom, maybe I'm concerned they're going to be disruptive in my production. So again, like you said, they're not going to be given that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And, you know, we have the same concern. However, we take it a bit further. We get these kids on stage working with the director, get them focused. And yeah, there's problems and concerns that we have every time we do a show. And we rehearse for about 3 months, about 2.5 months. And when we first start out, it's really difficult. You know, the kids are trying to figure out what they're doing. Some of them have major meltdowns because they can't, you know, do what they want to do, or they don't understand what's going on, or they you know, simply some of their illnesses are kicking in. And just for an example, we had a girl that had severe anxiety disorder, and she happened to be the lead in the show. And everything triggered her anxiety. The smoke, because we were doing The Wiz, and so we had a little bit of smoke going on. And the smoke triggered her anxiety. The stress triggered her anxiety. And she was having a really difficult time. But, you know, as we worked with her, her therapist helped her. We worked with them together, with the director. And it came to a point where she had to make a decision whether she wanted to continue in the show, whether she was thought she was able to or not. And she later recounts and says, you know, I really looked at myself and thought, what am I doing? I need to do this. What's going on? All these things are keeping me from doing what I want to do, and I really want to do this. And she, at that point, she says, I made up my mind. She says, you know what? I'm going to do this no matter what. And she did. From that point on, she was a different girl. She engaged more. She was she did the show wonderfully, and everything turned out great. And you know, she was a girl that came to us that was severe anxiety. And when she left, and I think the play had a significant role in her treatment. But when she left, she was a completely different girl. Her just looking at her face.
Well, and it sounds like it. It sounds like she can take what she learned in that one point within her therapy. That in some cases, I mean, there are people that may go to therapy for 10 years, you know, and not be able to get, you know, that one point that they need that allows them to catapult past all of the anxiety and really show who they are. So, I mean, I think it's beautiful. But, you know, I mean, what makes this different than the average high school performing arts program? Because I would think that they probably deal with some of the same things.
You know, that's true. But the thing that makes this different is some of these kids don't have this opportunity. Some of them don't even know they have talent. And it's a matter of... I want to be in the show. You know, one of the kids, I want to be in the show, goes to his therapist, and they approve him to be in the show. And he doesn't know anything about acting. They don't know anything about singing or dancing or anything. And so they're learning from ground zero. It's just an experience that they've never experienced before. And they learn something about themselves. They learn to work as a group. They begin to associate one with another of the whole cast, and the cast starts to become a close-knit group, because each of them start to depend on each other to do what they need to do, and they learn how a show works. You know, you have lead characters, but they're nothing without the supporting cast.
Right.
And they finally figure that out. They learn that, gee, I am important in this show, even though I'm not a lead, I am important in this show. And without me, there is no show. And we explain that, because it takes everyone to make a show. And they learn that. They become very supportive of the lead characters, and the lead characters become very supportive of those that are doing the rest of the show. And they really learn a lot. They develop that camaraderie.
Right.
With each other, and it sort of kicks them into gear, really.
Well, and it sounds like it also helps from the standpoint of understanding, because as adults, we have to learn how to survive in multiple communities. You know, we have our personal lives, our family community, but we have our business community, and some people then have their, you know, they could be a Rotarian or something like that, but you have to operate in multiple communities. And that's kind of what I hear you saying with these kids that are in this production. They may have a community that is their family, or a community that is their, you know, the group that they normally associate with. But I think this is probably going to be a stretch for them, because this is a new community that they're now a part of, which probably helps prepare them for adulthood.
Oh, absolutely. It does. It creates... helps them engage with each other. Like I said, we're a campus of boys and girls, but the boys go to school and the girls go to a different school, and we don't integrate the schools. And so this is actually a time that the boys and girls can socialize and learn to appropriately interact with each other. And so in that way, it's very important. Another thing is these kids, because of their life experiences have not been very positive mostly, it's a way for them to actually escape and be someone else. They can become an actor. They can be, you know, they can be the wizard and the wizard and the wiz, or they can be Joseph and different actors. And they can lose themselves in this character, in this role. And, you know, we've actually chosen the shows that we do for a reason, because there's an important message, really, in each of the shows that we do.
Well, give us some examples of some of the shows.
Well, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I mean, we all know that's a very...
It's a compelling story.
It's a biblical dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And, you know, they learn what's going on with this whole family and with Joseph and what he does and his brothers and the whole process. And they kind of learn a story that's worth some value to them, and they understand what's going on. You know, in The Wiz, for example, it's really about believing in yourself.
Yeah.
And that message comes across pretty strongly throughout the show. And when they're standing on the stage at the end of the show singing, you know, Believe in Yourself, it's pretty awesome. And they feel that, and they know that. And this is really developing their strengths, developing their self-esteem, knowing that they can do something that's really hard. And every one of those kids will say, this is the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was worth it.
That's what really makes a difference. You know, is I think for any of us to stretch ourselves is to be able to do something that puts us a little bit off our game. You know, it stretches us just enough to where we know that we've really grown. So yeah, I think that's really great. You know, while we're talking about the school, the campus, and things like that, for any of you out there, you know, if you go online and if you go to the website, they have a virtual tour. So, you know, you can open up another page on your computer. And if you go to www.heritagertc.org, that's HERITAGERTC.org, you can look at some of the things. There's a virtual tour. So as we're talking about this, again, keep our window open. If you're driving, you shouldn't be on the computer anyway, so you can't open it. But anyway, you can follow along with us, you know, while we're talking. And for anybody out there, if you have questions, we have some questions that have been emailed into us, and we will get to those shortly. But if you want to call in, you can call in. You can talk with Glenn or with myself. The number is 323-203-0815. So if you want to call in, go right ahead. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. And we are talking about using performances with at-risk youth that puts them in a position to be able to gain higher self-esteem and really become an important part of their therapy. So we will be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. All right, we're back. We're talking with Glenn Zog of the Heritage School in Utah. And Glenn, when we went for a break, we were talking about some of the programs that the kids are doing. Now, are there any of these programs that are coming up? And if so, what can the listeners do if they're interested in being able to see one of these?
Well, we're actually preparing for a Christmas Carol production that'll be done at the school on December 9th, 10th, and 12th. And Then we also are prepared. We'll start preparing in January again for Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in April. And you can go online, and we'll have update those as they become available, and you can purchase tickets and come see our show. We were fortunate enough to have a charitable person give us a performing arts center, so we have a 600-seat auditorium on our campus, which allows us to do these shows in and rehearse in. It's really a great place to do these shows, so we're fortunate.
And now, are any of these filmed or videotaped if people are able to go online to see them, or is it always live?
It's always live. It's a live show. We don't do the videotaping of it.
Well, I'm just thinking for some of us that if we can't get to Utah, but you know, but would still be interested, you know, that might be a way. Maybe a new suggestion of you know, going ahead and cutting DVDs and letting people send in a donation and get a DVD to be able to see it.
Well, you know, we do actually do the videotaping for the kids in the show, and that's kind of the, we don't offer those for public distribution, unfortunately, because of copyright issues, but we do it for the kids.
Okay. Well, good. Well, again, if anybody is interested, if you go to the website, again, that's www.heritagertc.org, there'll be information in regards to those upcoming shows, you know, as to when. I guess there's one coming up. Is it, what, December?
December 9th and 10th, which is a Friday, Saturday, and the 12th is a Monday.
There you go.
Yeah.
So is it snowing there yet?
Well, there wasn't any snow when I left, so I don't know.
Not on the campus, but I mean as far as the ski resorts.
Yeah, the ski resorts are open.
See, there you go. The ski resorts are open. You can go up. You can take in a show and then head up and start your winter skiing.
Yeah, for sure.
So, great. Now, I guess the one of the things, and I wanted to make sure I get to some of these questions. Now, one of the listener questions that we have, it comes from someone who says that my 14-year-old son has gone from being the apple of our eye to just plain rotten. He yells at his 11-year-old sister until she cries, disrespects his father and I, and his grades have dropped from A's and B's to D's and F's, all in a period of about 6 months. How do we know if he is a good candidate for your school or any school like yours?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different things that you need to do or you can do to, and there are some resources out there for you to check on what's going on with your 14-year-old son. It sounds like something's happened in the last 6 months of his life that's triggered some event that has caused him to drop his grades and be disrespectful, as was mentioned in the question. A lot of times there are some resources at your local school that you can go to a counselor, and they can advise you. Something else that you might consider is doing, you know, there are some signs that of drug abuse and drug use that you might be looking out for, and there's different things that you can kind of watch and see. There are, you know, sit down and think back what's happened over the last 6 months. Is there something that may have triggered something in his life, something severely happening? Could be an event, could be drugs, could be something at school, something's going on at school that you don't know about. Could be a lot of different things, and I don't know where you are at with being able to sit down and talk to him, but that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely, and it sounds like, that's great advice. First of all, try to communicate with your child. And if you're unable to do that, there are professionals out there that you can talk to, depending on what the issues are, be it an educational consultant, psychiatrist, psychologist. You maybe start with the school counselors and see what they've seen. So, yeah, there are lots of things that you can do. But, Glenn, for this person that's sending this message in, or anybody else out there, can you, I mean, walk us through a little bit of, you know, the day in the life of a student who is going to your school? If you can give them an idea, that may help them think, yeah, you know, that is a good fit for us.
Yeah, a lot of times we have the kids that come to us have once again decompensated into a point like, as you know, 6 months not going to school, going from A's to D's, maybe have dabbled in a little bit of drug abuse or drug and alcohol, have some sort of serious emotional event that's going on. And yeah, a lot of times we have kids that are so severe, they're depressed, they can't function at home, they're not going to school. A lot of parents have sought professional advice, go to a therapist or their doctor, a psychiatrist. A lot of times these kids are hospitalized for stabilization because they may have become suicidal or whatnot. And a lot of times the kids that come to us have been stabilized in a hospital, and then they'll come to our program. Most of the kids that come to us have, here again, aren't functioning at home. They're not in school. They may be out and about, not at home, running away, living on the streets, living with their friends, doing different things. And they're just out of the effective control of their parents. And the parents, most of them, don't know what to do. And a lot of time, what you need to do is if possible, the school districts, for example, can do some testing, do some psychological testing. They can do some educational testing. And there may be something educationally going on where they're not being able to function in school because of something there, and that may, you know, may be the reason for their grades to drop, that they're not being able to perform in school for whatever reason, and it might be an educated related disorder or something that's going on that's preventing them. So, you know, there's as they go through this process with the school district, they can get, you know, you can go to the counselor, ask for testing. There are some resources there to help you begin the process to see what's really going on. And once again, seek professional advice. If you've got a therapist, or talk to your doctor and have them recommend a therapist or a psychiatrist that you might want to take them to and do some counseling and see what's going on with them. And, you know, sometimes that might be tough to get the kids to go, and you might not have success at it. But, like I said, typically these parents that are involved with the kids in our program have gone through this process over a quite lengthy period of time. Sometimes they've, you know, they've tried different things, outpatient therapy. They'll go to a day school, do day treatment. Parents try, you know, all sorts of different programs.
Well, now, in contrast, because now we're talking about a lot of the issues or things that the parents may see in their child that lead them to believe that their child needs some help. So in contrast, share with us, because I'm one that loves success stories, but what are some of the kind of changes that you see in some of the students, you know, as a result of their participation in the school, as a result of their participation in the productions? What are some of the results, the things that you see that keep you doing what you do?
Well, you know, when the kids come to us, they're in school every day. That's number one. Because they're in school every day, most of our kids are in our program for about a year to a year and a half. And during that time, they can see about 2 years of catch-up time in school. That's if a student is behind, and most of our students are quite a ways behind in school. And mostly because they're in small classrooms of 10 to 12 kids, all of our teachers are special ed certified teachers, you know, and we're actually approved by the Department of Education in California to take students in our program. And so over that course of time, they're able to get individualized attention with a special ed teacher. They have an academic advisor that helps them with their education process. And one of our kids commented not too long ago. He said, "Oh, you know, school's easy here." And I just kind of went, "Well, what do you mean by it's easy?" He goes, "Well, I'm in school every day, and I've got somebody who's helping me do my homework, and I've got somebody who's helping me understand everything, and that's what makes it easy." Because now he has the resources that are available to him you know, every day. He's in school, he's getting the instruction he needs, and he's able to continue. He goes, I want to stay here until I'm 18 so I can get my diploma.
That's great, because, yeah, and that's what I meant when I said, you know, the things that you see that keeps you doing what you do. Because when you see that child that now has the bright eyes, that now when you realize that the structure that you're providing for them makes the difference, you know, that and now they're asking for the structure. They're realizing that school really is easier if you have the resources, you have the structure, and you're surrounded by the people that really want you to succeed. So I think that part is beautiful. I'm going to go to another question. Checking our time, and this one says, after reading Alan's announcement, I went to your website and your school looks wonderful. My daughter has stopped attending the public high school she is supposed to go to and has now missed the last 3 weeks. I would like to see her at a school like yours, but don't think it is something we can afford. What do you suggest we do?
Well, you need to always start with the least intrusive intervention, and that's where, you know, our school is really for those kids that have not been successful in other less restrictive, intrusive treatment or options, education programs. And, you know, we don't, and that's more beneficial for the kids. Sending them away from home is a pretty big step, and sometimes it's necessary. Because the kids are not going to improve without doing that. And there are resources at home, and I think you need to start. You know, 3 weeks might sound a long time for you, but it's really not. You need to go to your guidance counselor, go to the school, and find other resources that are available to you. You know, if there's a... Yeah, our program's pretty expensive because it's very specialized. You know, we have master's level therapists, and they're all licensed. We have psychiatrists, and we have nurses, and we have special ed teachers, and they're all working in concert to help these kids get back on track. And unfortunately, it's not a cheap process. It's pretty expensive.
Right. But now, and wouldn't you also advise them to, as soon as possible, get an IEP done in hopes the school district may start looking at possibly handling the financial end of this?
Yeah, absolutely. An individual education plan, an IEP, is great for your student if they're struggling in school and they're not performing, they're getting D's and F's. And that's why I talked about before, getting some educational testing to find out if there's something educationally going on or if there's something psychologically, get a psychological evaluation done. The school district can help you do that. They have those resources available to you, and they can do that with you. And then if it shows that they are deficient, then they can get on an education plan, which helps you and your child afford, because the school district is obligated to educate your child. And with that obligation, they can help you determine what's necessary and what's appropriate, and they can help fund that.
Right, and I want to add to that as well, that there are advocates out there that can help you. So you, as a parent, if your child is going through something like this, if you get the IEP and if you do not agree with what it is that they're saying, you may want to get an advocate, an educational consultant, get somebody there in your corner that's going to be able to help you, you know, get your child to the program that is going to be able to help them best. And if you don't know of somebody like that, if you're not getting referred to somebody like that through the school district or whatever, you can go to our site. It's answers4thefamilyblog.com. Send that question in to us. We will find out where you're at geographically, and we'll send you someone. You know, we'll send you the name and phone number of some people in your area, an educational consultant or someone who can help you really look at what it is that your child's going through, and to possibly help work with the school district in getting your child to the program that can best help them.
Absolutely, and those resources are available. And, you know, this question of the girl that's been not attending school for 3 weeks, you know, getting them in and if it gets to the point where you need those resources with the school district and you're not getting anywhere, you know, an advocate is a great place to help you get the answers that you need with the school district and help you get some help. It's important. Don't give up. There's resources out there. You just need to find them, and there are ways that you can find them. And you know, we get phone calls all the time asking, gee, these similar questions, and what am I going to do? And we always say, you know, your child's not appropriate for our facility, but you know, here's what you can do. And we're very helpful that way too. If you know, feel like you want to give us a call, we can help you steer you in the right direction as well. So
absolutely. And what is the best phone number for them to call?
It's the 800-433-9413.
All right. And to give that one again for anybody out there that's driving or something.
It's 1-800-433-9413.
All right. And again, if you are driving and you can't write that down, again, you can go to our site and we will forward that information to you. But Glenn brings up a good point. And again, myself having been in this industry for a long time, you know, I'm aware of the fact that they do get lots of calls. And I think, and Glenn, correct me on what the percentage is. What is the percentage of calls that you end up actually just referring them somewhere else?
Well, you know, we review a lot of files on kids. And about 48% of the files that we review are not appropriate for our facility. And we refer them to other facilities that are more appropriate. We give them resources that they can contact. A lot of times, like I said, you mentioned before, an ed consultant can help families find appropriate resources as well. And there's different options, and some are better for your, you know, that fit your kids' needs better than others. And, you know, and we'll let you know if our program fits your kids' needs appropriately and they'll be successful in our program. We certainly want to have the opportunity to do that. But, you know, 48% of those kids are not appropriate, and we do help the families find other resources.
Right, and now and you're going to refer them to another program, and I want to share with everybody that Glenn is also the president of the National Association of Schools and Programs, which is known as NATSAP. So not only are you calling into a program where you know, they help a lot of kids. But again, if it's not a good fit, they're going to refer you probably to another NATSAP program. There's 150 member organizations that are programs that deal with certain types of kids, so that there may be a niche that's a better fit. And so, Glenn, we've got about 5 minutes left. Can you share a little bit about NATSAP? And let's just start with why it was organized, or, you know, why NATSAP was needed at the time in which it began.
Well, NATSAP started, I think, about 1999 as well, and it came about because of many programs in the industry were concerned about the quality and the safety and the care of children in treatment, and it continues to be an issue about kids receiving quality care, kids that are safe in treatment, because that's very, very important. If you send your children to somewhere that's relatively unknown to you, you want to be assured that this program that you're sending them to, they're going to be safe and they're not going to be mistreated. They're going to be respected. And that's really why NATSAP was created, to form basically an alliance with several programs around the country to create ethical standards, principles of good practice, those types of things, so that we can agree on what's good for children and what kind of care is appropriate and what's not okay to do with kids in treatment.
Absolutely. And I, you know, in knowing a little bit about it at that time as well, I also know that you guys share. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about it is that this is a community of people that are so concerned about helping that they're not looking at it as competition, but they're sharing information. So you really have some of the greatest minds at some of the greatest programs that are getting together and saying, well, you know, this is working for us. Maybe if you added this to your program, and now you have everybody raising the bar because they're all able to take the best of the best. And I think it's great. And I remember soon after NATSAP was formed, and one of the heads of one of the programs found out that there was another program that was just really struggling. But he knew that they had really good people. And he literally flew in and spent some time in the other program and went through it with them and said, you know, I think if you just make this little change here and you improve your marketing point to here, and all of a sudden he had brought this other program that's literally his competition. But if you're all focused on the kids, then who cares?
Yeah, you know, we're all so different, actually, in many ways. And I think the important thing is what's best for the child,
yep.
What program's appropriate. You know, I just had a phone call just a couple of weeks ago from a program in Iowa asking me, gee, what do I do about this? Do you have any ideas how I can do this? And I said, yeah, you know, I've got lots of ideas. And you may think it's odd that I'm helping you because you may become my competition someday, so to speak. But you know, it's all about improving quality of care and making sure kids are safe. And you know, that was really important at the beginning of NATSEP, and it still remains the focus of NATSEP, is making sure that the programs have resources. We share policies and procedures, mm-hmm. we share ideas, we share treatment ideas and treatment modalities and all sorts of things. And hey, you know, we do it this way and this is how it works for us. And quite frankly, I've been to several of our conferences and looked at how somebody has done a particular program and thinking, gee, how can we incorporate it in our program to make it better? And we've made some major changes in our program because of the information that we get at conferences and things that are being shared by NATSEP.
Absolutely. And I think that, and there are two other thoughts that come to mind. One is that as an industry, if you don't continually raise the bar, the government will do it for you.
And that's exactly right.
The government will come in, and we may not like the way that they choose to measure things. So I think that's another great thing, is this government doesn't need to come in because the bar is raised to a level that everybody's very comfortable with it. But I think another thing that, you know, about that time in which NATSEP started was also about the time of the explosion of the internet, you know, in the sense of you know, and again, myself having been in this business for 30 years, parents found out about programs through the school counselor, through the educational consultant, maybe through their psychologist, through their therapist. That's how they found out about programs. And so at that point, the programs had to make sure that they were doing the right thing, because if you're not, these therapists are going to know. These educational consultants, psychologists, or whatever, they're going to know. And they're not going to refer people to you. But about that time, with the explosion of the internet, you had people that could put something out over the internet, and the parents were getting this information in a completely different way. But it's very difficult for them to weigh it and compare it and to know just how good it really is or how accurate the information is. So I felt at the time in which NATSEP was formed that was another really important aspect of it, and really good timing, is it opened up something to where parents could go, wait a minute, you know, to anybody they happen to find on the internet and say, you know, are you a member of NATSEP? Do you have a certain amount of a level of expertise that you can show us that you've needed to show to get into NATSEP? You know, I think that's been a great service for parents, I mean, all over the country.
Yeah, to be a member of NATSEP, you have to be licensed by your state and or accredited by Joint Commission or COA, which are accrediting bodies. And those are bodies that actually accredit hospitals and those types of organizations. So there's some pretty strict policies and procedures that you need to follow in treating children so that they're safe and receive appropriate care. And you know, you have to have a licensed clinical person overseeing their program so that it's just not somebody who thinks, you know, they can open up a treatment center and help kids. They really have to, and that's what NATSEP's all about, is making sure that those programs are licensed or accredited and appropriate for kids. And, you know, there's some bad actors out there in the industry, and you have to be careful. And that's another reason NATSEP was formed, to help parents find some good programs.
Well, Glenn, I want to thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. When you get back to Heritage, please thank the people that are working hands-on with our kids. And again, and thank you for what you're doing with NATSAP. I mean, to take your time, you know, I've been involved in associations as well, and I know it takes a lot of your time away from your own business to be able to, to dedicate your time and work within an organization like that. So thank you for your time, and thank you for what you're doing for our children.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me.
All right. And again, out there, everybody, if you need to get a hold of anybody in regards to this, you can go to NATSAP. You can go to their website. You can go to Heritage, which again is www.heritageRTC.org. And if you're driving, just go to the one you know, answersforthefamilyblog.com. Have a great week.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.